Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 49 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of all things Southern Minnesota breweries and beer, except for maybe not this week. We kind of went north. I'm Corey Butler, one half your co-host.
And I'm Ira Carlson, the other half.
And we welcome you to the Lake Superior experience.
Or should I say a third today?
We are joined by a friend. We're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but we do have a number of samples in front of us, as we've alluded to probably now for the last 4 months. We've just had such support from folks sending their beer samples that we just had too much to handle today. So we brought in a third expert to talk to beers. Our buddy Joe Gazier is here. How's it going, Joe?
It's going really well. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, this is really kind of the first time we've done this. I know we had Randy join us from Imminent Brewing when we were doing an interview with him. He kind of joined us on this segment and talked the beers. But I was just looking at what was ahead of us and didn't know if we're up for the challenge, at least safe enough for me to drive home. So I was like, let's bring a third in. But before we get to that, Ira, what's on tap today?
Well, we got a fun one. This very first stop on our Duluth trip, where we stopped in at Lake Superior Brewing, located in the Lincoln Park neighborhood in West Duluth. Obviously a very old brewery in the state, but kind of newer tap room. And so got a chance to stop in there and obviously enjoy some of the good beers and talk to Ryan. Then we got a style of the week brought to us by Andrew, and we have the beers of the week brought to us by our Firehouse Liquor. So it's going to be a kind of a fun show coming up. Of course, I always say fun, but
as you always say, it's a fun show. Well, it was a fun show, but we had a fun day. We knocked out 4 interviews. Ryan's up today with Lake Superior Brewing. It's a great conversation. We got 3 more coming up. We got Bent Paddle Brewing Company. We've got Blacklist Brewery / Blacklist Artisan Ales up in downtown Duluth. And finally, Hoops Brewing over on Canal Park. So a lot of great shows to look forward to here in the next several weeks. Looking into early February, so a lot of good stuff there. We had a great day in Duluth. It's great to have Uber and Lyft up there, so we got around safely. Not that we consume too much, I think, but just the variety of beers. Sometimes you just don't want to have to worry about driving when you're thinking about, okay, did I have this beer? What do I have for that beer kind of thing? Well, we had to bring in the reserves today.
Yep.
We're on the power play now.
There is a lot of beer to drink today, and we need all the help
we can get. We've got the man advantage.
Yeah.
To the coin of hockey term. But numerous beers in front of us, and we'll start with Prize Brewing Company. They're kind of wedged in between the North Loop and Northeast Minneapolis. Kind of a cool spot right along the river there, Mississippi River. Kind of a cool story with Jeremy Prize and Prize Brewing. Had a beer out in market, the Miraculum IPA. We're doing contract brewing, I believe, or at least he was brewing himself, but he had accounts, but no tap room, no brewery that people could go to, and kind of built up the respect, and were able to convince people to, help him fund his business, and kind of did the old school hardcore way, where you actually build the business plan and build the proof in the business. And the Miraculum IPA is a great IPA. That's a Midwest IPA, as he calls it. This is a take on that. We've got a bottle in front of us called the Blood Orange Miraculum. Clearly, Blood Orange IPA takes his core beer, puts in some Blood Orange. This is batch number 8, a bottle, 750 milliliter in front of us. And boy, when you stick your nose in that glass, you definitely smell that Blood Orange.
As the late, great Harry Carey said, holy cow. I was not expecting the flavor off of this thing. I saw that obviously they had orange in there, but it is a big, bold flavor. Blood Orange was really kind of, I feel like, became popular not last summer, but the summer before.
Yeah,
I saw a whole bunch of them at the State Fair and other stuff, and I enjoyed those. But this is a really good beer that's a big, bold flavor. If my wife were down here, she'd probably steal the glass and walk away on me with it, because I really like this beer. I'm impressed by it.
Yeah, as far as Blood Orange IPAs go, this is one of the best that I've had. The first thing that hit me when I got it was the aroma of, it reminded me of an orange creamsicle as I first smelled it. And, the taste certainly didn't disappoint. This is an excellent beer and well worth the time.
Too bad you guys can't, the visual would have been good. As soon as Joe said that, both Corey and I stuck our noses in our beer trying to get a big whiff of it.
You got to back it up. You got to be able to talk about it.
No, this is a great beer. I really like this one.
And Ira, I think you're absolutely right. About a year and a half ago, it seemed like everybody had a Blood Orange beer. And I was kind of lukewarm on the flavor, and I didn't know what to expect with this.
And I enjoyed them. I mean, I thought they were good. There were some fun ones out there. Obviously, State Fair, a lot of people bring them out and stuff. And so, but I haven't had one in a while. Actually, I had one maybe a couple months ago, but this is a really good beer. I can't stop saying that.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I was kind of lukewarm on them as I kind of worked through several different iterations of this from different places about a year and a half ago, like you said. A lot of bitterness coming through on those orange ones, I recall, which is kind of a turn, like bitterness in a different way than the hop bitterness. Just like, you know, an orange has just got a lot of pungent flavors.
Kind of that orange that's right at the end of its life.
Yeah.
It's about to go bad on you. That kind of bitterness is kind of what I think you're thinking about too. And I would agree with you. Some of them when they first came out were, that always seemed to be the thing that came through. This one certainly does not suffer from that at all. This is an excellent beer.
No, that's what I was going to say. This is by far probably, in my mind, the best one I've had. And I'm not saying that because it's the one in my hand. I really truly believe that. It's just, it's got that full orange flavor, but it's not overwhelming.
Well, and you brought up the creamsicle, and now as I'm tasting it, I almost have just a little bit of a creamy back end to it, mm-hmm. you know, which I think is the flavor coming through too, but it's just it.
But you wouldn't think from like an IPA version of this, like yeah. you think would maybe like with a milk stout version or just a stout or a porter version, but it's an interesting flavor to get from an IPA.
Yeah, really good.
So well done on that. And finally, our friends over at Tilling Brewing Company in Cannon Falls sent over a few beers. Ira, you had the chance to go visit them last weekend. Seems like it turned out bountiful for you. You brought back some samples.
Well, they, you know, the invite showed us one that they were interested in highlighting and asking if we're interested in coming over and picking it up. And so I assumed that that's what I was doing and came back with three and had a great time.
And you had a good night. And we don't need to go into all the details tonight, but you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you and your wife.
Yep. You know, Chris, Ryan, Scott. They were all there, had a great time just chit-chatting with everyone, and it was a good night.
Yeah, no secret. We enjoy spending some time there when we get over there, and we're enjoying some of the beers they sent over right now. They've got three new winter beers. Should be around for a good bit. We're getting to these pretty early in their cycle, so hopefully you have ample opportunity to go try these out in the Tilling Tap Room in Cannon Falls. So in front of us, we have the Rosy Cheeks. That's an Imperial Red Ale with a sweet orange peel in there. We have the Wee Winter Ale. That's the 80 Export Scotch Ale with mulling spices. And then finally, their big beer they're releasing, they've got it in crawlers as well as a big bottle, a 750-milliliter bottle, that is, the Tipsy Gingerbread Man. So that's a winter porter with molasses and ginger. So I guess starting with the Wee Winter Ale, what do you guys think of that one?
So this time of the year, one of the things that you see a lot of is mulling spices. And this is one that if you really enjoy a good mulling spice, those flavors really do come through very well in this beer. It's a very flavorful beer.
What I really like about this is that they brewed it at a lower ABV. It comes in 5.5. So it's an easy drinking one. Tilling, I think when we first started going there, if I remember right, a lot of the beers were around 6, 7. They had a couple going over 8. They're climbing up there a little bit. They got some bigger beers, a little bolder beers going on and stuff. Had a little conversation about Scott. He wants to go higher even. So, you know, he's interested in exploring.
I can endorse that, Scott. Please
yeah,
do.
Yeah. But that being said, this is a really tasty beer. Actually, I'm liking it almost better right now out of the crowler. Maybe I was just overwhelmed at the brew house. But the humorous thing is the next beer we're going to talk about was my favorite when I was in the tap room. But this one, I think, steps up a lot more after sitting in the crowler a little bit and everything else. But I definitely like this. I like what you talked about the spices in there. It works really well for this time of year. Still an easy drinker, so you can throw it out on the table as you're enjoying, you know, maybe a little turkey and cranberry or something
Absolutely.
Else. I can feel it's just pairing well with some food. Maybe even some Campbell cheese.
There you go. Cheap plug. You're right. I mean, time and place is important. You don't always need that 8-9% beer as much as I enjoy those beers. That 5.5, it's not super small, but it's definitely a wee beer for me. Those spices are nice. I know we talk a lot about pumpkin beers on the show, probably more than we should. And, you know, the true pumpkin beers I enjoy,
well,
the spice
does.
Well, I loop you in occasionally. And people think about the spiced pumpkin beers a lot of times not really being a good fit for them because it's too sweet or whatever it may be. Winter, though, I have no problem with throwing in nutmeg and cinnamon, those type of spices. I think it's great for the way you feel for the year, this time of year, the way you want to feel for this time of year. It warms you a little bit if it's not a super boozy beer. And I think all the spices kind of make you feel like home. And like you guys said, pairing it with food is just a wonderful thing. So sitting down, you know, for Christmas dinner, New Year's, whatever it may be, this would be a great beer to have and have multiple of them without having to worry about falling asleep or being too goofy come present time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a slight side tangent, but you know, a couple of years ago, my wife and I would talk about like, oh, we're going to pair something with food. It was always about the wine. But now, you know, especially with the explosion of craft breweries and getting to know some of the people and everything else, beer is in the mix for, you know, pairing with a meal.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. Oh,
I want to grab this beer for that occasion kind of a thing. And, you know, Antillian's definitely offering up some ones. They, little side tangent, but right before Christmas.
Is this a side tangent to the side tangent?
Well, yeah, kind of, but they're going to be doing
tangent a tangent squared.
They like doing a lot with their T1 Belgian. While I was there, I had a raspberry firkin T1 Belgian, and they're going to be doing one with cranberry that they've already done once at Thanksgiving. It's a big hit, so they're actually going to be kegging that and bringing that out. So they're definitely thinking a lot more about the adjuncts that they add in to, you know, for flavoring and stuff. And I think it's starting to show in their beers. I mean, they've gotten a lot more creative in the last year than, you know, from when they first opened up.
Well, I think a big part of it is you need to build that core brand and make people aware of who you are, and definitely have beer that's approachable for anyone who may walk in that door. And once you get a little more comfortable, you play into that seasonality of the beer. So the fall beers, the winter, especially the winter beers. I love winter beers. So let them flex their muscles a little bit more. So let them define who they're going to be. But I've been happy with what I've had so far.
Very much
and,
so.
And this spice beer, especially as I have another sip and another sip and another sip, man, that just lingers on the tongue. I like it a lot, actually.
Oh, it's a really, yeah, really good spice to it.
So Rosy Cheeks is next. That's the Imperial Red Ale with sweet orange peel that comes in at 7.9. So for an Imperial, it's on the smaller side of an Imperial, but technically still there. What do you guys think?
I mean, I like this one. I really enjoyed it when it was on tap in the Crowler. I don't know if it kind of lost a little bit of the orange, but the orange really came through more in the tap room. That being said, I think the red is done really nicely. Still has the caramelness to it and everything else. I think the, of all things, I would expect the citrus to linger a little longer, but it kind of like is subdued a little bit, but still overall a good beer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The citrusy taste was a little bit, off on it for me, but as far as the red is concerned in general, I thought it was a very good red.
Yeah, the red definitely comes through for me. I do pick up citrus. It's not definitively orange though. And like you said, maybe it's just the can versus the tap room. I'd be curious to try this in tap room, though. I mean, it's still solid red.
Yeah, you know, I'm in a unique position because more often than not, when we have these samples, I haven't had a chance to try them in the tap room and everything else. And in this case, I went to pick them up, and even though I already knew what we were getting for our samples, I had a chance to try them in the tap room. And so it's really kind of interesting to go from how they come off in tap to, you know, how they finish in a can and everything else. And in fact, the last one, I think it was a lot better now that it's been sitting a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Well, and just to be fair, too, I mean, we read what something should be or what you might get from it, and there's a spectrum. If it says orange peel, it doesn't mean 100%, it doesn't mean 2%. And depending on who you are, you pick up different things. So we just had the Blood Orange Miraculum, which was clearly, I think, 100%. Came through. This might have been a more subtle approach anyway, and maybe it just for us is not coming through as strongly, but someone who isn't a few beers in may pick up that orange a little bit stronger than what we're doing. So not a discredit to them, just and maybe that's what they're going for. Just a we got the citrus out of it, just wasn't definitively absolutely orange. And then finally we got the big one, the Tipsy Gingerbread Man. I think we're all working toward that status right now. We've got in the Crowler here. It's also available in 750 milliliter bottles in the Tillian Tap Room. It's that winter porter with molasses and ginger.
So this is one where I really enjoy molasses. And this is one for me where the molasses flavor really comes through. So it really adds something to it. And honestly, it's not something I really expected to get out of a beer as far as a flavor is concerned, too. So but for me, that unexpectedness is a really good thing. This is a really good beer. But the one caution I would have for you is if you are an individual that does not like molasses, this may not be the beer for you. But for me, this is certainly a good beer.
Well, I like the fact you bring up the molasses because that's not normally a flavor you're at least being pushed a lot in a beer and stuff. But I definitely like it. And again, the interesting thing was in the tap room, I wasn't picking it up. I think there was some, you know, sensory overload and everything else. We have the benefit now that we've added crackers to the mix of our sampling to make sure that we can clear our palates and really enjoy a flavor and everything.
Water
else
doesn't do what it used to,
right?
Do.
But I mean, this I like this one much better than I did in the tap room, just because I think I'm, you know, maybe stepped away from it a little bit. I think the flavor comes through really well. The gingerbread, everything else is just a really, really nice flavor. Corey and I each ended up with a 750 milliliter to let age in our cellars. And I even talked to Chris for a little bit about it, about the beer and everything else. And he was talking about how he'd had one that they'd done from a year ago and just really enjoyed it and everything else. And so I think letting this one age a little bit is going to bring out some of those extra bold flavors and stuff. And gingerbread isn't one I would normally think of, but I think this balances out really well.
Yeah, you've never made my basement shower and your closet sound fancier. They call them cellars. That dark space that's going to be kind of cool, or at least cool enough to respectfully hold this beer for a while. Not to throw either of us under the bus, but I did. You know.
Yeah, my Joe hasn't seen it yet, but my my cellar is a pretty poor representation of how to store beer. But
we both have some work to do. But yeah. I'm becoming more in the mind that a beer is meant to be consumed now.
Yeah,
so I don't sit on too much beer anymore. But when I do, it's my basement shower because that's a nice dark place.
Yeah, I've seen your cellar.
That's true. Yeah, you have seen my cellar, and not much there anymore. I just use the fridge now and keep things in there. I think I've got one beer I've aged for a year now to do a, and I probably killed all the hops because I left it in my fridge. But you know, whatever. What's interesting about molasses is it's not a flavor I'm that familiar with, probably largely because I'm younger than 40. But I like it. But I wonder how many people are, especially people in this scene, are going to be familiar with that flavor. Because like Joe, you said, it's not a flavor people probably seek out that often. If you're not familiar with it, you may not be able to identify it. And if I had not known this was molasses, I wouldn't be able to say this is molasses. I mean, I've had molasses cookies occasionally, but where else could I identify a molasses flavor? So I think it's interesting from that perspective. It's something a little bit different. I like it. It has a nice sweetness to it. You know, it comes in at a decent ABV, but it's not going to kill you. I think it's a great sipper, and I enjoy it. But I wonder how many people would be able to identify that flavor, because we talk about flavors a lot here. And sometimes we can place in our mind. Sometimes we know what it is. It's on the tip of our tongue. We can't identify it. This is one of those flavors, though, I think would challenge some people if they're not maybe of a certain age who grew up with molasses and a lot more products.
Yeah, I at least in my mind, I put molasses and maple sugar kind of in the same vein and stuff. It's molasses is a bigger flavor, but a little less sweetness. You know, I mean, it's a big thick syrup, you know, when you pour that out and it adds a sweetness to it, but not at a high level. It is a unique flavor, and it's interesting to bring that up because Joe and I being over 40, I remember it being used a lot more in recipes and everything else. And I actually, now that I think about it, I'm thinking, like, do we even have it in our cupboard upstairs, you know, where it was just a standard thing in the in the cupboard in my childhood. So,
yeah, it was always something when I went over to my grandmother's house, too, that she always had some of it over there. And so, yeah, and unfortunately, I'm dating myself a little bit, but yeah.
Well, somebody needs a date. Your wife doesn't.
But as far as flavors are concerned, that is the first thing that really jumped out at me. But I would call it a unique flavor. You're right. It's not as sweet as some other, like maple syrup is concerned, but it's definitely something that really, I think, makes this particular beer what it is. And it's, like I said before, it's really good.
Yeah. Are you guys getting much of the ginger? As someone who's not as familiar with molasses, that flavor definitely stands out to me, as I've stated. So I'm not really picking up much ginger. I'm just curious if you guys get the ginger. It's the difference between the canning, the bottling, in tap room. Get air, you get different things in there.
Well, that's where
it's such a new flavor to me. I'm wondering if it just overwhelms me.
No, I'm definitely picking it up here now because, like I said, I wasn't quite picking up in the tap room and everything else. And now, we've been recording for a while and everything else. I'm almost wondering if the temperature is balanced out a little differently compared to getting it directly off a tap. Because I always talk about anytime we have these beers that, you know, really have a lot of flavor and everything else, I almost want them a little warmer so that some of that flavor and everything else comes out. The coldness,
you gotta let them breathe.
You know, kind of hide out and stuff. And this one is giving, you know, it's breathing a little bit. It's coming out with a lot more flavor. I pick up the ginger a little bit. I'm intrigued by this one, especially because of the fact that with aging, you know, we talk about the molasses flavor and we talk about the ginger. I'm really curious, as it ages, do they age the same way? Does one come over the other and everything else? So this one is going to be one of those intriguing ones of, like, a year from now, is this the beer that I want to, you know, or am I just as impressed or am I blown away by it? Based on what Chris told me about one of the ones that they had aged previously, I'm looking forward to this one. But
Yeah, I think this one will age pretty well. You know, as this one has warmed a little bit, I would agree with you. The flavors have really started to come out in this, and I do pick up a little bit of the ginger, too. So as you think about...
old man mentality.
Yeah. So as you think about...
Joe and I are back at our grandmother's house eating gingerbread.
Exactly. And Corey's in diapers, but that's a different story. But it's, the flavors really do come out in this one. Well, yeah, we don't talk about that much, though.
Only on those long trips.
but yeah, they really do. The flavors really do come out in this one as it starts to warm up. This isn't one I would say that you want to drink at room temperature. It needs to be a little bit cool. But to have it cold, like you would think of a traditional beer right out of the fridge, no. This one, I think, is much better at that in-between
probably
state.
45, 50, somewhere in that range. Absolutely. I think it's really letting it breathe, getting some flavor to it.
Well, now that we're nice and lubed up, I forgot to do this on the front end of the show because I'm so excited to jump into Duluth and the beer itself that we're having in front of us. That I should say, hey, we're on 95.1 FM, 1080 KYMN Radio, streaming live on KYMNRadio.net, so you can always listen to us there live or after the fact. You can also catch us on ontapnorfolk.com. We've got all our shows, all 49 now on there. If you're listening to us right now live on KYMN, it's probably online now. You can also catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, and numerous podcast platforms. Social media is a good place to keep up with us. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for On Tap Norfolk. See photos and videos and status updates and beer news that we share and all sorts of fun things. And upcoming guests for sure. Facebook's a good place to see who we've got coming up on the show. This is stop number 1 of 4 in Duluth. But I don't think we're officially coining this anything this time. Last year was Corey and Ira's Excellent Adventure Winter Warmer Series or something along those lines, right? Playing homage to Bill and Ted, but also beer.
The Great North Beer Exploration? I don't know.
On the drive up and back, we did throw a couple ideas up, but nothing stuck. So I think we're just going to avoid it this year. But I think
we'll decide by show 4.
Great Northern Exposure.
Or officially ruin everything we did up to that point. But yeah.
Well, we ruin most things, so yeah, it doesn't matter. But social media, go there. Look for updates. Probably not about what we're going to call this winter series, but we like doing these winter series. It's kind of fun to knock out some shows over the winter. It's so tricky to know with weather. We alluded to in the last show, the Tim Roach show, that driving out there in late November, we ran into weather. So it's hard to know in this state come December, January, if you're going to be able to connect on a interview that you plan months ahead of time because there's just a little ice, a little snow, a little darkness. So
plus, there's a couple of good breweries up there, including Lake Superior.
Yes, and that's coming right up here, so stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is coming out of just up the up north a little bit there in Stillwater. It's Liftbridge Brewing Company's Fear of the Dark, which is a collaboration with, of course, 93X. Beer of the Dark is a black lager made with 100% American malt and hops and stabbed with enough roasted malt to create hints of coffee and chocolate. And, you know, it is a big, bold beer here. A lot of fun, a lot of flavor to it. I'm drinking it. I'm looking at the can, and I'm kind of feeling a little AC/DC and something else. Maybe a little Metallica. I don't know. It's a really big, bold flavor. When I first took a sip of it, I hadn't had a chance to look at it. I was... you know, we poured it in a glass, really nice and dark, and I was trying to figure out the flavor. And then once I realized it was a lager, I kind of figured out what it was. I was expecting a big porter or stout or something else. And no, it's just a really nice, good tasting lager with a big bite to it, big, nice flavor. I love this beer.
I see the AC/DC in your eyes. I see the darkness in your eyes. And this is one of those good beers we talked about. It's, well, I guess it was with Hoops Brewing, come up in a few shows here about and we've talked about this occasionally, challenging people's perception of what a beer should be when you see it versus when you smell it, when you taste it. So people hear lager, especially they hear 93X. It must be this clear, crystal, kind of yellowish, pale, straw-looking beer, and you pour it. It's like, good God, that's dark. It's a dark lager. But what's it taste like? It tastes like a lager, like it should. Nice malty bill, a little bit of hops in there, pretty well-balanced, but definitely on the malty side. I think it's pretty solid, actually.
Yeah, this is one when I first looked at it. It definitely looked like a porter too, and that's kind of what I was expecting when I first got it. But it's definitely a good lager. I really enjoyed it, and once you realized what it was supposed to be, it was really good beer. This is one you definitely want to know what it is you're getting into before you get into it, because If you go into it like I did initially thinking it was a porter, you're in for a surprise, but I would say it's a pleasant one.
Well, that's what I love about beer. Challenge people. We talk about that on the show. Like, put something in front of people that they don't expect what it should be. Just because it's dark doesn't mean it's a, quote, dark beer. You don't know what it's going to taste like until you taste it. And that encourages people to actually talk to the people serving the beer, and hopefully they know what they're talking about, and you can have a better understanding of what you're consuming. Because there's beer doesn't come in like two or four flavors. There's a lot of different things going on with beer.
Well, and you know, I wouldn't say it's a resurgence, but I find it funny that we're surprised when we get a lager out of a craft brewery because of the fact that we all pretty much grew up on lagers. Yeah. You know, lagers were just kind of a standard beer. And then the craft brewery scene came out, and there's a lot of other things. And I love the fact that some brewers are going back to the lagers and producing some really good, solid beers, which end up being a backbone of America. And at the same time, you can have fun with it. You know, so
well, yeah,
I think this is a fun take on a good lager, adds some extra flavors and everything else to it, but it's still a good beer.
Yeah, it's a bit of the misnomer of the lager style of beer that's only reserved for big beer. That's clearly not the case. I think with a lot of these new craft breweries, they focus on ales because they're quicker to turn around. It's easier to mask any deficiencies with your beer because you got big, bold flavors. So there happens to be an issue with your beer. It gets covered. Lagers have to be pure. And, you know, we're not necessarily fans of big beer here, but they figured out what they're doing scientifically. And you have to applaud them for that. So it's nice to see small, and not that Lift-Bridge is small, but even like a three-barrel system make a lager. And if they do it well, kudos to them because if they make a good lager, whether they do an Oktoberfest or something similar to that, and they do it without any issue, then you know they can make beer. Ales, you can cover that stuff up. So Lift-Bridge, been making great beer for 10 years. This is another good offering from them.
Absolutely.
And then we've got Galdam Brewing Company. They've got the raspberry wheat in front of us. Unfortunately, Galdam is one of those breweries who are going to see their end here at the end of the year. So you've got 9 more days to go visit them in Nisswa. Otherwise, I'm sure they'll have some cans here around in area liquor stores. We got this, obviously, from Firehouse Liquor, a nice pint can. Beautiful little pelican on there with some raspberries. It's a nice wheat beer, nice raspberry flavor. I've had the fortunate opportunity to go visit Galdam up in Nisswa as I've gone up that way to ice fish and do other things. And really cool space. Sad to see them go. I know they're retiring, and they're going to try to get someone else to come in that space. So hopefully we either see the Galdam name out there, or maybe someone else can overtake that space and create a new brewery. But the beer in front of us, I actually think is pretty good. The raspberry wheat, definitely a good representation. Definitely a good representation of the wheat style with that raspberry twist on there. I think that's a nice flavor that they add to it.
Yeah, I mean, with a wheat beer, there's a certain flavor that comes with it, which I wouldn't say is an acquired taste, but it's definitely a certain style that, you know, when you have it, you know it. And I think the raspberry balances really well with it. I don't think the raspberry is too overly sweet. It's but it's still a bold flavor. It's definitely raspberry balances really well with a wheat. Really nice light color to this beer. I definitely like this beer. I kind of wish I'd known about this one a little sooner because I like this one a lot.
Yeah, this is the one that's got a lot of nice fruit flavor without being a true fruit beer. And my wife will tell you I'm not really a fan of fruit beers, but in this particular case, you know, the flavor of the raspberry really comes through with the wheat, and I think it mixes very well.
And if you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 in Dundas at Firehouse Liquor.
Look for the fire truck. Okay, we're kicking off the first of four interviews today from Lake Superior Brewing Company, hanging out with Ryan Woodfill, head brewer of Lake Superior Brewing Company. How's it going?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for coming out.
I'm doing well after I butchered your name first time. We got through it second time. Don't worry, we edited it out so people don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm still going to reference it because I did screw up. Woodfill, that's a pretty easy one, and yet here I am. I messed it up. So, like I said, and we've been teasing this entire show, and actually for a couple months, kicking off our annual winter retreat. We did this last year in southern Minnesota. Here we're visiting the beautiful Twin Port city of Duluth, and you guys are our first stop. Lake Superior Brewing Company, definitely one of the pillars of Duluth Brewing. But some people may not know where you guys are at, because you guys started as a production brewery, still are obviously heavily into production, do have a taproom space that people can visit you now. So where can people come find you?
Yeah, so we are located in Lincoln Park. Kind of the craft district of Duluth. One of the things kind of we mentioned that we're one of the pillars of craft brewing. So, yeah, we are the oldest microbrewery in the state, the oldest one in the region. Back in 94, actually opened up in the Fitker's Complex. Some of you guys are probably familiar mm-hmm. with the Fitker's yep. Brew House there. So there was a space in that building, which was probably 15 by 15, this space behind you guys right now.
Huge.
Yeah. And there are three guys working in there. That included, you know, the tanks and everything. All that was all in there. So in 98, moved over to this building. So okay. I've been here ever since. Quite a bit larger space here.
Yeah, and you guys have expanded here, if I'm correct, right?
Correct, yep.
So you had the original space. You've had to grow from there. Obviously, you guys, like you said, have been around for quite a number of years. Craft before it was cool is the tagline you guys like to use. And you're looking at 24 years right now, 25 next year.
Yep.
So growth obviously has been a big part of that. Back in 94, wasn't as much going on. And even in 98, you guys are still on the kind of the front of that. And looking in your production space right now / taproom space. Fun little character space, right? People, you kind of retrofit into a tap space. People come in here Thursday through Sunday can come
yeah,
try their beer.
Yeah, so we're open 4 days a week for taproom. First and foremost, we are a production brewery. Mm-hmm. So you guys kind of look around you. Anyone that comes in to visit the taproom, you'll be able to see the tanks. You'll be able to see all the equipment. In some cases, if you come in early enough, you can just kind of hang out with us while we're brewing and we'll pour you some beers. So it's first and foremost a
terrible hobby to have.
Yeah.
You don't get that when you go to the Gap. Here, try on our clothes. Well, actually, you can do that, right? So started as production brewery. You obviously are here more recently. You joined it May, you said?
Yeah, first week of May.
All right, so not even about a half a year, a little more than a half a year. So maybe this isn't a question you can really answer, but obviously production breweries are really what the business was about for a long time. And then obviously the taproom law went into effect. Alluded to you guys kind of retrofitting the space here. You weren't here at that time, but today in your process of how you work here, is it a big part of what you guys do? Is it just an opportunity for people to come in and try you out, especially if they aren't familiar with you by chance? And obviously Duluth has become such a destination for many reasons. Is it just nice to get people in here to get your beer in front of them?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is. It's an opportunity to get people in here that may have, you know, may not know where we're at, may not have actually, you know, visited our brewery, or maybe not even have tried our beers yet. Mm-hmm. To get them in here, it's just a very, very mellow taproom setting. You know, you can get our beers, you can talk with the brewers, talk with the taproom staff, pretty much try everything. You know, walk around the brewery if you really want, check out the tanks. It's just kind of a nice nice space to come and enjoy a beer and actually, you know, check out the place that's making it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's really, I think, paramount now for breweries to have at least some sampling space because people want to come try the beer. And being a legacy brand in the state, the people who know, right? But everyone who's been getting into craft brewing the last 5 years, especially in the last couple of years, it's hard to stand out, even with production and packaging throughout the state, cans, bottles, whatever. There's just a lot of stuff on the shelves to compete against. So I think that's a great opportunity for people to get in here and try some beer. Before we delve more into the business side of stuff, because that's really not your forte, obviously, let's hear more about Ryan the Brewer. Can you tell us a little bit about where your interest in brewing started?
Yeah, absolutely. So about, how old am I? About 14.
You're 14?
Yeah, no, about 14.
Beer for 14-year-old.
About 14 years ago, a buddy of mine, college roommate, and you know, we just very interested in home brewing and craft beer and local hobby shop. We had walked in and we had seen a, you know, I don't know, just a basic home brewing kit. You know, the stuff had probably been sitting on the shelf for about 2 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. It looked like it had been sitting there for a while and kind of said to ourselves, you know, hey, we'll come back when we're 21 and buy this. And there's old guy behind the counter is like, oh, you don't need to be 21. He's like, that's just a bunch of buckets and hoses and stuff. You can buy that for
and
like
3-year-old extract.
Yeah, he probably was.
Just give
yeah.
me some money, please.
Right. And to be fair, we were like 20 and a half or something.
You're
like that.
Enough.
Yeah, it was close enough. I wouldn't recommend any underage.
Was this in the South
out there? No, this okay. was actually in St. Cloud, so central okay. Minnesota.
Skipping ahead on where you're probably heading to, but
right, yeah, exactly. So yeah, first batch of beer we made, it was horrible. Had about an inch of yeast sitting at the bottom of some clear bottles that we had found, but we drank all of it, and we thought it was awesome at the time.
It was fresh.
Sounds like my first brewing experience, which pretty much made me not brew again.
Right. Oh, really? No, we kept going with it. We just
chewy.
kept buying the kits, and eventually we started trying some new stuff, and you know, eventually they started turning out okay, and then eventually they were good. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just one of those things I really wanted to do.
Just standard ales? Or?
Yeah, mostly just doing ales. It was kind of just what everyone else does when they first start out the hobby. Just throw it in a carboy or a bucket and let it sit in the basement, really not knowing a whole lot what's going on.
We didn't want to wait
fermentation.
Too long,
right? Yeah, exactly, yeah. yeah, and then fast forward a couple years. I was living in New Orleans, Louisiana at the time, and a job came up at a very well-established brew pub, Crescent City Brew House. It's over 25 years now. It's older than this place. Early 90s it opened up. German brewmaster, right in the French Quarter. It's the only brewery in the French Quarter. So if you've been to New Orleans and you've been in the French Quarter, you've probably passed the place at some point.
German taking on the French Quarter.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool place.
Time heals all, right?
Yeah. So yeah, the brewmaster, Wolf Kohler, he's just been around for a long time. I think he started working in breweries in Germany when he was like 14 or something like that. Was the brewmaster at Belican Brewing in Belize for a few years, and then eventually just opened up brew pubs in southern Louisiana, East Texas. Hmm. So traditional German lagers, that was all he wanted to brew. I had to twist his arm just to even do anything with, you know, IPAs or any American styles. But eventually took over as head brewer there. So, you know, when I started, it was sort of established that he was going to train me, and that, you know, he was going to take a step back and just kind of let me take over. And it took, you know, I don't know, probably about a year or so, and I was head brewer and learned a lot there, learned a lot from him. And it was just a really fun time.
Were you there in 2014?
Yes. Yep. I would have been there in 2014.
I should have crossed paths with you. I was down there for work. I travel to the South occasionally for work, and I'm bringing this up for a different reason, but I could have, if I looked harder, because I was down by Bourbon Street staying at the Ritz for work, I know, good for me, but I didn't get out as much as I want to, but if I would have known a brew pub was that close to me, I would have made the effort. But I brought this up quickly just because, like I said, I get to go to the South pretty often, and my issue always is when I'm traveling from work is, you know, what do you have for local beer? And there just doesn't seem to be that much local beer. I'm talking like Florida, Louisiana, Georgia. And from what I know and from what I hear, it's a lot of it has to do with just the water. Like, it's hard to get the water that's in the right situation for good brewing.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that fair to say? Because
So it was all right. So when you were in New Orleans, and this is something I'd tell a lot of people that go there, is like, I wouldn't recommend drinking the tap water. And then, you know, you need to brew with that water too. So we actually used like a reverse osmosis system. Yep. But there'd be times where there would be boil alerts in the city. You know, there'd be some sort of contamination getting in the city water and stuff. So yeah, that was definitely a challenge.
So it's a stark contrast to what I guess was your next step coming to Duluth, where you have some of the best water in the world.
Yep,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So 2015, my wife and I moved up here, originally from Minnesota. We were kind of looking to make a move. I knew that I was, you know, still wanted to stay in the brewing industry, and job opened up with Canal Park Brewing. So Duluth really wasn't on my radar. Actually, we were looking at East Texas more than anything, East Texas or Central Texas. Passed up a job offer in Austin, Texas, just wasn't really the right fit. But this opened up here, and it was just something I wanted to do. And, you know,
so how did it get on your radar? I'm curious, if you're looking in Texas and you hear about something in Duluth.
You know, so I did hear about it through internet job postings. Mm-hmm. And when it did pop open, I started looking into Duluth. I'd obviously been here before, and it started looking really good as far as what we wanted to, you know, not only the job position, but, you know, where we wanted to relocate to.
And naturally, you probably moved up in like January, right?
Well, we came up for my interview in January.
Nailed
so
it.
Yeah, so the interview process, how that
stories
went,
always work out that way, where you always go the worst time of the year.
All right, so and then this is funny because my wife's from Houston and she has never lived anywhere north of Houston before. So,
they have machines that move snow.
Exactly.
Right? Well, it's like a lawnmower.
You know, how long had it been from being in St. Cloud to you were in New Orleans? Several years? So was it a little hard to come back to the cold? Or
I had been down there for like 7 years, 8 years, something like that.
That would be quite the adjustment after
a hard enough time in November feeling like 30-degree weather.
Yeah.
But come March, we're in flip-flops when it's 30. So it's just adjustments, right?
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, then now that I move up here, it's like 70 degrees and I'm complaining about how hot it is, where down there it's every day from like May through September is like 110 degrees and you get used to it.
That's what we get for being mammal. So you came up in January. She was pretty shocked by
It ended up being a nice, you know, nice for Duluth in January. It was like 20 degrees maybe.
All right, that's
and
pleasant.
It was the sun was out, which was really nice. And
that's almost false advertising.
We ended up getting a hotel at like the lodge right next door. It had a beautiful view of, you know, the frozen lake and whatever. But yeah, she really liked it, and everything obviously went well at the interview. And yeah, moved up here. So
you spent a number of years there.
3 years total. Yeah. Yep.
So how do you think you've grown as a brewer from Wolf working down in New Orleans to working at Canal Park for you came here in May? And from your crappy homebrew too.
Yeah. Homebrew's gotten a little better over the years. Drinkable now. I would say, you know, working at Canal Park, that was definitely a, you know, it was necessary for me. So when I worked in New Orleans was, you know, everything had already been pretty much set in stone. This is how we've been doing it for, you know, 20 years, you know, you don't change this up. And it kind of just got to the point where it was very, you know, the beers are really good and I loved working there. It was really...
it's a process.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be a machine shop or...
Yep, exactly. And we were really just brewing. We didn't really have the capacity to brew more than four beers at once, which, you know, nowadays four beers at a brew pub is not a lot. You know, when they opened up in the early 90s, that was the only thing around it, you know, anywhere in the South at the time. So that was kind of a big deal. And they just, you know, challenges of an old, you know, building, the French Quarter, mm-hmm. that was, you know, not only a 20-year-old restaurant, but a building that was 300 years old.
Sure.
You know, it's hard to expand mm-hmm. from there. So yeah, coming up here, really had the opportunity of just sort of making a lot of new beers, you know, continuing the beers that were already there that are really good, and just really coming up with my own stuff, a lot of recipe formulation. That was really fun. And just honing my skills as a brewer.
Yeah, for them not having, obviously, the length that maybe New Orleans Wolf had. Can't remember what the place was called, so I just go with the location and the guy's name,
yep.
right? You had a lot more flexibility here to kind of play around and kind
Correct.
Of learn, right?
Yep, in a newer brewery, quite a bit more.
So those expectations weren't already in place.
Right, yeah. So it was just a really good opportunity to kind of just come in and hone my skills as a brewer.
So what were some of
necessary.
The... Sure. What were some of the wilder recipes you came up with over there?
You know, I never really came up with anything just off the wall,
like
but I had a lot of fun. Yeah,
something.
No, but I had a lot of fun. So if you guys ever been to the location... Mm-hmm. You know, it's a destination location. We're doing bigger batches, actually 15 barrel batches for a brew pub. So in the end,
you're on full display.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So in the end, it still has to be something drinkable that's going to sell. But I had a lot of fun with it. We were doing some kettle sours. You know, just trying to jump onto beers that may be trending elsewhere that nobody else in the area was doing. You know, trying to do stuff and hadn't been done in Duluth yet.
I had gone there maybe fall before last. Came up with the family and. Had a flight and liked the kettle sour. Liked, I think you had a pumpkin beer on that I liked quite a bit.
Okay, yeah, that was funny when I made that one. Was
I like pumpkin beers?
You know, I hate
any follower of the show knows that.
I was at the time. I was like, I don't like pumpkin beers, mm-hmm. but that was another thing where it was like, you know, let's make a pumpkin beer that I'm actually going to enjoy. And it was pretty subtle. We actually used some pumpkin puree in the mash. That was mm-hmm. that was a fun brew day. It smelled pretty good throughout the whole place.
Sure. Yeah. So how did that set you up for coming over here in May? Because now you're going back to production brewery.
Yeah,
to process.
Yep. So I was brewing about 1,000 barrels, maybe 1,100 barrels a year there to coming over here where we have the capacity to do 3,000 barrels a year. But most of that is distributed, packaged mm-hmm. and distributed, not consumed on site. So I got to the point over there where I really just I felt like I needed a challenge or a different challenge, I should say. So I just, you know, this came up as a good opportunity. A lot of things were changing, in good ways over here, right around the time I started in May. So back in October, we had some new ownership take over. With that comes a lot of new branding. So mm-hmm. all the beers have stayed the same. Recipes have stayed the same. The beers have always been solid, you know, really traditional ales that have been really good. I've loved the beers here, actually.
There's a good reason why they were in business for 23 years
before
the Orange changed.
Yep. And one thing that kind of caught my eye here, too, is this has always been one of my favorite breweries. Just kind of a full circle story. Going back to, like, St. Cloud, when I was living there, you couldn't really get a lot of, you know, local craft beer. There was,
sure.
you know, we were drinking a lot of Summit. You know, maybe going to like some of the brew pubs down in the cities, Barley John's and
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
So when I would come to Duluth, it was always the brew house. You'd stop and eat lunch and get some growlers. And then I'd buy six packs of, you know, Lake Superior special ale and oatmeal stout and Kolsch and and bring them down, and that's kind of how we did bottle shares back, you know.
We'll get into the beer here shortly, but Sir Duluth Oatmeal Stout's probably a top five beer for me.
Even before I started here. So that's really one of the things that, you know, it was really cool to be able to, it's just kind of a unique experience for me to come in and like, all right, this is one of the breweries that got me into craft beer. And now I'm able to come in and, you know, sort of, you know, continue what they've been doing and take it in a different direction.
So it might be hard for you to respond to this because you came in after new ownership, but does it feel like the company, the brand, the reaction from people coming in here, is it re-energized around the Lake Superior name? Because, again, you don't survive 23 years without support and people loving what you do, but obviously there's some new branding, some new graphics. You guys have transitioned largely from bottles to canning. What's the feeling been like since you joined in May?
It definitely feels rejuvenated, which is pretty cool. There's a lot of really good energy. Like I said, I think the branding has a lot to do with that in the marketing. It just kind of pops off the shelf now.
Which is important these days. It's not just about what's in the can or bottle. It's about
right.
Getting
but the
eye.
Good thing about that is what's in the can and bottle is good. So it's
ultimately
I think it's,
should
it's,
what
right exactly. So I think it's just it's more accessible to people. We're getting out there. People are starting to see it more and recognize it more. And you know, once they know they like it, it's starting to you know become one of these brands that's it's more of a go to brand. Or yeah, it just feels like there's a lot of really good energy here.
Why make the move to cans? I know the obvious answer, but just curious to see from your guys'
perspective. So, yeah, and just to clarify, we still do bottles. Bottles are still probably the what we package the most in, bottles and draft. Okay. However, we did make a move to cans, which you guys are hearing in the background. That's our Misabi Red Ale.
It's a great sound.
We also package our Kayak Kolsch in cans. So those are the only two we're doing right now. Misabi Red is a red ale that was brewed some time ago and discontinued. One of the new owners, Lisa Blade, this was her favorite beer, not just Lake Superior beer. This was her favorite beer, which was, you know, somewhat of motivation to actually, you know, buy the company. So it's been brewed since April and in cans. So you guys can find that on the shelf now.
I think this is the first time I've had it. I like it. It's got that.
Yeah, it's the first time for me, but I'm already loving it. The can says 12 fluid ounces of Sailor's Delight. I don't know. I think that's a great slogan.
Well, and obviously the packaging allows for you to take it on your sailboat or take it golfing or fishing or whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And the Kayak Kolsch makes perfect sense for that, obviously, throughout the
yep,
warmer
kayak
seasons.
Yeah, Kayak Kolsch is great for in cans.
So obviously you guys have done it well for a long time. You here in the last 7 months make good beer, that is. You guys have focused on core recipes. That's really been the foundation of what this company has been. You want to walk through some of the beers? We just talked about the Misabi Red Ale. We've been sipping on a big boy here to start our day off, but it's great when it starts snowing and you drive into town.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah, just to kind of take you a rundown of our beers, kind of the core ones. You guys are probably familiar with Kayak Kolsch, German style ale. It's just a really good. I don't know a lot of Kolsch's out there, and you know I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but a lot of Kolsch's you find out there, to me tend to just be you know just blonde ales. But like a true German Kolsch, I think just has a really clean character to it, nice and bready. Just one of my favorite styles of beer. A little bit harder to make. We lager it. Takes a little bit longer to make. Just kind of a delicate process. You know when it's good. You know when it's not. You know. So you kind of make these small calls while you're brewing to you know make sure you're hitting your temperatures, your times.
Sure.
So that's going to be consistent every time. Next one, special ale. It's basically a English style pale ale. However, we use some American hops in there for flavor. So that one's been. It actually was the best-selling beer for a long time here. Very comparable to, you know, when like Sierra Nevada, when that stuff was really popular. If you put that side-by-side with Summit, EPA, and ours, I think, you know.
Right there.
For me, I can, you know, tell the difference between ours, but it's.
And that's a former silver medal.
Correct.
Award,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah. So pretty much everything we brewed won awards at some point, which
right.
is pretty cool. Yeah, just some really solid recipes. But yeah, you get a lot of that cascade flavor plus the you know kind of breadiness left over from the English yeast.
So, obviously, moving from the second brew pub at least, Canal Park, where you got to be a lot of use a lot of your creativity, and here obviously you're more about building these brands and pushing out the beer to people outside of this room. You said you still get to do a couple of things in here, right? To have a little creativity at use.
Yep, yep. And hoping to do quite a bit more of that. Currently, we try to have like some sort of like infusion on tap. Mm-hmm.
I suppose when you're putting out thousands of barrels of beer, it's a matter of time, right?
Right, right. Mostly. Yeah, exactly. Just finding the time and the space to do it in. But we also do once a month, we do a firkin on Fridays, first Friday of every month. So that's something that's really cool to do. Just can be anything from like dry hop to infused to just a traditional mm-hmm. cask of something.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's really fun. And every once in a while, we just pull out the small pilot system, do like 15 gallon batches of just whatever. We've done smoked ale. We had one of our production guys had got some honey from the Yucatan. We brewed like a honey ale that was really good. Just something to kind of just keep us all so creative.
Sure. Yeah.
So that brings up the question: with as much brewing as you've done and everything else, you actually mentioned your own homebrew. Do you still homebrew? Because it's interesting.
It's like a work brew now. I do it here.
Pilot batches.
It's easier to do it here. I got everything, and
that's what I was going to wonder. Is that you made that comment, and most brewers we've talked to, their home system has kind of disappeared a little bit just due to getting more than enough of it here.
I had to kind of piece together some stuff here. There's a bunch of homebrewing equipment here. Everyone pretty much just brings all their stuff here, and I don't know.
I think it's the same with anything. I have friends who are chefs who hate cooking when they're at home. They just want to order food out.
Yes. Yeah, I know a lot of chefs that just go to like McDonald's after work or
mechanics
something.
Who don't want to work on their own car because they're tired of working on cars.
I'm an IT guy. I dread when I go to a friend's family member's house. Hey, my computer's doing this, and I just want to watch the game. Right.
You get put in these boxes. I'm in communications. Every time I get involved with a nonprofit, hey, you want to do our communications? No, that's not why I'm here. it's easy to get put in those boxes, and sometimes you just don't want to do it. Clearly, Duluth has been a destination for a lot of reasons, and as of late, it's been for craft brewing a lot. There's been a lot of growth there. Obviously, you're part of that with your prior position. How do you view that, Duluth being like a craft destination? It has to be cool, right?
I do. I enjoy it. Kind of depends on who you ask. I know there's a couple different sides to it. I really like seeing a lot of new breweries open here. It means that Duluth is getting known for craft beer, you know. I think Minnesota in general is known for having really good breweries. Duluth is a smaller market. It's pretty big per capita. I can't even tell you how many breweries are here anymore. I think it's over 13, 14, maybe more than that now.
Yeah. Well, if you include
Earth Rider
and you include Twin Castle Ports Danger. And
yeah, you can even consider the ones on the North Shore.
Yeah, I mean, and I think two that get overlooked that don't get included in the count are the two Irish pubs that brew their own beer as well. So
yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I think there's eight in Duluth proper.
Right.
And then you've got Earth Rider just across the water, Castle Danger. Now Borealis Fermentary, I think they closed, but
yeah, that's no longer here.
That's no longer here. But just up the shore, you got Voyager and Gunflint Tavern and plenty of beer.
Yeah, so I think it's really cool. It's cool to have the thing we talked about water before. Mm-hmm. I think that's really good. Lake Superior Brewing Water is awesome. I mean, certainly better than New Orleans.
Makes your job a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Way better than Lake Michigan. No, that. Bastards. So you got the IPA coming up. Anything else that you have in your brain that you'd like to get? Or is it – obviously, when you're a production brewer, there's a lot more that goes into it. Like, hey, I've got this recipe. Let's do it. Obviously, there's packaging. There's the money side of it. Anything else – or maybe something fun you want to try in the tap room for a tap exclusive?
So, yeah, you will be seeing a lot more like the taproom exclusive stuff. So I think that'll be really cool. I know that one of the things we're going to be working on in 2019 is a beer release. I don't know if I can say too much about it right now, but it's going to be basically a series of beers that are going to be released.
Nice.
We're looking at about three of them. Yeah. So
like special one-offs.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that'll be it'll be all Lake Superior themed is kind of where we're going with that. So that'll be something fun to look forward to in 2019.
Okay. And a good place for people to follow up on where that stuff's going to happen, Facebook, Twitter, website,
yeah,
stuff
Facebook,
like that.
You can go to lakesuperiorbrewing.com, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all that social media.
Facebook, Twitter, yeah, go look for it. Search Lake Superior, look them up. Yeah. It'll be the Lake, especially the Lake Twitter account. If people follow them on Twitter, they'll know what I'm talking about. And then it'll probably be you guys. But
right.
Lake Superior itself has a great Twitter following. So.
Oh, does it? I'm sure, yeah.
They profess themselves to be the superior lake in the world. So very tongue-in-cheek account, but it's a fun one I happen to follow. But Ryan, thanks so much. I think this is a great kickoff to our North Shore tour.
Yes, thank you. Great beer.
Yep, thanks for coming in, guys. Yep,
cheers.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns here to talk about one of the styles of beer I have brewed a lot in my day, which is oatmeal stout. This is an English style of beer from the London area, and it really evolved from a London porter to a strong stout, which just means a stronger version of a porter. And then some brewers got the idea of adding oatmeal. Actually adding oats into the mash of the beer. And what that does to the smooth, sort of creamy, rich, chocolatey stout is it gets a really silky, what we call, mouthfeel. So a lot of people hate that word, but it's a silky mouthfeel to the oatmeal stout. And this is a style that almost died. In fact, there were no brewers brewing oatmeal stouts at around World War II. And after that, Samuel Smith Brewery in London decided to bring it back. So they looked through some historical records, figured out how to add the oatmeal into the beer, and revived the style. And now, if you get a stout at a small craft brewery, chances are there's oats in it because of what it does to that beer. So oatmeal stout.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Ryan at Lake Superior Brewing Company for hosting us. Great way to kick off our day in Duluth, the first of four visits throughout there. And they're doing a lot of cool things in Lake Superior Brewing Company with the beer, and got that new IPA coming out. And obviously the seasonals are fun. They're rebranding. A lot of cool energy. It's good to see that brand kind of revitalized. I had a great time sitting there. What about you, Ira?
Oh, I loved it. Really fun space. Obviously a great conversation. Didn't make it on the airways, but we had a beard talk going on too. So it was a little bit of fun all around. But yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed it. They sent us home with a little bit of Kolsch in their red. And I actually enjoyed those earlier this week. Actually, one of them I enjoyed last night while we were recording this. Enjoyed it while watching the Vikings suck it up a little bit. So,
Well, really, that could be any week.
Yeah, so there is that.
We're not really dating this interview.
But no, overall, a lot of fun. And definitely would like to get back up there again.
Well, as people know, we're all business during these interviews, so we don't have any fun. So it's nice that we have those extracurricular activities afterward to talk about beards and things of those sorts. So we'll be back, though, not talking beards, but maybe beer here in 2 weeks. That's January 5th, 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio, 1080 a.m., 95 to 1, a friend you can count on. Or otherwise, you can catch us online at ontapnorfield.com, kymnradio.net, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, all those good places where you get the podcast. Our website's a good place to catch all our prior shows, as well as iTunes and those places. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are good social media places to catch us, see what's coming up on our show, especially Facebook. We have all our upcoming events, all our interviews coming up, and we post photos and videos and just different beer updates, especially Twitter. We're pretty good about retweeting stuff and letting people know about what's going on in the area. If they're not following specific breweries, I'm on there pretty actively retweeting stuff from area breweries, so if people look to us as a source in that way, it's a good way to see what's going on at Tillian or Eminent or Tanzimal or Montgomery or wherever they may be interested. 11 a.m. January 5th. Join us back in 2 weeks. We'll be happy to talk about the new year and our second trip down the road. We've got Bent Paddle Brewing Company coming up. Had a great conversation with them, so we'll be back in 2 weeks to hear that story. Cheers.
Cheers.